one of us crammed into that truck of mine, paying no attention to the highway signs.
90 mile an hour toward the county line.
Oh, wheat sack 12 pack back again. It's a BEE-double-E-double-R-U-N.
Woohoo!
Our buddies and their babies letting down their hair.
As long as we're together, it don't matter where.
Ain't got a lot of money, but we just don't care. Knowing that the fun is in the getting there. Aztec, long necks, paycheck spread. Oh, it's a BEE-double-E-double-R-U-N. Oh, I can't stop thinking what the hell they were drinking when they made this county dry. Carrying on.
We loaded up the wagons and we headed home.
I guess half a dozen cases doesn't last that long. Come tomorrow morning, it'll be all gone. Yeah, let's turn around and leave town sounds again. Like a BEE-double-E-double-R-U-N.
Hey, like a BEE-double-E-double-R-U-N.
Man, if that don't get your blood pumping on a Friday, I do not know what. And to all the freedom-loving beer drinkers all across this great republic and around the world, we bid you welcome this day to a rather unusual hour on Perspectives on America. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bennett, I think. Ugh, do come join us in the chat room. I expect the conversation is going to be rather lively and unusual today. The topic of conversation, if you ain't figured it out yet, it's BEE-double-E-double-R-U-N. Beer Run. Well, not Beer Run. That's the title of the song. Garth Brooks and George Jones. Chat room is www.federalobserver.com. And we are going to have a little fun on this hour. We don't get to do it very often. And frankly, I'm going to have the fun, and Jerry ain't allowed to come in here today. There, my friends, is surprisingly little information available on the internet about liverwurst. Well, you know, it is a type of sausage. I mean, there is at least vicarious history online. Meat products and parts and other animal whatnottery, including organs and other things that most packing houses would throw away with disdain or sell to southern folk, ground into a paste with plenty of solid fat and hopefully some strong spices, have been stuffed into cleaned animal intestines and served as food probably for nearly as long as we've been cooking with fire. Now, there's truth behind the yarn that law and sausage are the two things you don't want to see being made. Ah, but you see the eating. The eating is the pleasure, my friends. Salami and mortadella from Italy, which amount to raw pork. Don't make that at home, by the way. Patty-style breakfast sausage, Italian sausage with the hot pepper flakes in it. Spectacular with sautéed bell pepper, onion, and garlic. Summer sausage with cheese and barbecue sauce and the poor man's pâté, liverwurst. Liverwurst is different from the others in that it is spreadable, at least the good stuff is. And there's liver, among other things, in it. Oh, there's that word, liver, Bennett. You have not used that since the last time you spoke about cancer cure. The nutritional balance, my friends, is something else we don't want to know about. But true to our form, we'll proceed anyway. Better than 75% of the calories in liverwurst come from pure fat. There's a ton of vitamin A in it, but it's the toxic kind. You see, carrots have a substance called beta-carotene that makes your body produce its own vitamin A. Oh, you don't need to worry about ODing on beta-carotene. You don't really need to worry about ODing on vitamin A from liverwurst either, but it is at least possible to OD on vitamin A, just so you know. But you see, like cheesecake, the flavor and texture of liverwurst are worth its impeachable nutritional profile. Oh, be careful what you buy. There are some imported German brands. Go figure. You know, Germans, like our good friend down in Ponder, Texas, Germans invented liverwurst. And the Germans invented liverwurst that are tough and slimy and, well, armpit flavored. And of course, there's good old Merck and Oscar Myers, about the best you can find here in this country when you can find it. Little strong flavored, as liverwurst must be, and it goes well with a hearty rye bread, raw onions, white onions, and mustard. Of course, some folks like that good old American French's yellow mustard on their liverwurst. I happen to like some of that brown, spicy stuff. But there's one other thing missing. Beer. Oscar Mayer liverwurst is referred to on the package as Braunschweiger, which a food encyclopedia will tell you is a subset of liverwurst, being always spreadable and supposedly reinforced with milk and eggs. So if you're allergic to those things, I guess you shouldn't be eating liverwurst. Of course, you're not always going to find the milk and eggs in it, though, no matter what you do. But the beer? Consider the possibilities, my friends. One restaurant, an Irish pub in Destin, Florida, serves liverwurst, or Braunschweiger, as you wish to call it, exactly that way. Liverwurst, raw onion, rye bread, and the mustard. Ah, their liverwurst sandwich deal includes a free beer. They pile a pound of meat on the sandwich, about 1,520 calories, don't you know? And to eat that entire pâté mound would probably initiate one of those near-death experiences that you read about. I go through one of those every time I have a steak. You know, but if you eat three of them, they give you a free T-shirt and an Alka-Seltzer. Of course, by then you've had three beers. They serve it with low-cholesterol potato chips, so I guess that's okay. I can get through maybe half of one sandwich, usually asking for extra bread, and let's not forget the beer. Of course, then I return to my friend's condo, I lie on the couch, I have a two-hour near-consciousness experience. Liverwurst, my friends, along with Beethoven's late string quartets, Michelangelo's artworks, and automated travel, it's one of the greatest achievements in the panoply of dead European male culture. At the dawn of the age of liverwurst, somewhere in north central Europe, there was a round-bellied, middle-aged, extremely European males enduring relatively harsh winters, wearing garments that did not cover their legs. It was all gathered around a carcass. They set to work on all its inside parts and outside parts, and such men had a flair for making dead animal parts appetizing and giving them long shelf lives. Of course, some Italian dried sausages keep for many months at room temperature, and prosciutto, the dried Italiano ham, it's aged at room temperature near the sea with windows open for 2 years. And as usual, Italianos remain the most accomplished dead European males with regard to food, the glory of liverwurst notwithstanding. It wasn't European males who invented beer, however. No, not as far as we can guess. It was Egyptians. But beer might even predate them as well. But you see, it took Europeans to elevate it to the passion it is today. You can't swing a sausage in Belgium or Holland without knocking over a microbrewery, and each brewery custom orders special snifters for its beers to highlight whatever character the brewer wants you to detect. Different shapes accentuate particular aroma components differently, at least so I hear. And as someone once said about a golf course without wind, Leverwurst without the beer is like a face without the nose. Oh, by the way, you can buy Alka-Seltzer pretty much anywhere you want to. Make yourself part of the great onward march of culture, my friends. Relive the grandeur of ages past. Feel a connectedness with the best of the untold generations before you and those to come. Experience the glory of Leverwurst, and don't forget Sabir. I think we're going to be back if he ever gets a heck out of this place.
Could be holding you tonight. Could quit doing wrong, start doing right. You don't care about what I think. I think I'll just stay here and drink. Hey, putting you down don't square no deal. At least you know the way I feel. Take all the money in the bank. Think I'd just stay here and drink. Listen close and you can hear that loud jukebox playing in my ear. Ain't a woman gonna change the way I think. Think I'd just stay here and drink.
Merle Travis there. Guess I'll sit here and have a drink. You know, for those of you who have listened to this program, Perspectives on America, for any length of time, you know of our proclivity for old movies. We're going to take a few minutes here and raise our mugs, our steins on high with a heartfelt toast to movies about beer. The movies carry our fantasies, do they not? And so does the beer. There are movies about beer, and there are movies in which beer plays a central part. And my friends, they are called beer movies. And we love them. Of course, we love them better if we're sitting there in our armchair, probably having a beer. And the best beer movie of all time is one of the greatest films ever made, with one of the greatest movie couples of all time. Oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite movies. And, you know, it's only going to be just a few more short weeks, and every television station in the country will be playing it because, no, not because it's Christmas and it ain't going to be It's a Wonderful Life. No, we're talking about The Quiet Man, John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara. Well, first thing the Duke does in his character, Sean Thornton, first thing he does upon arriving in Ireland, the land of his ancestors, is to stop into a pub and ask for a black beer. Well, at the wedding of Thornton and Mary Kay Danaher, the beautiful red-haired O'Hara, Micheline Flynn, played by Barry Fitzgerald, takes a glass of champagne, but he dumps it for a pint of beer to make a real toast, a man's toast. But you know, the movie's greatest scene is the fight between Thornton and his brother-in-law, Red Will Danaher, played by Victor McLaughlin. And while beating the daylights out of each other, they stop at Cohen's. That's not Cohen, it's Cohen. For a break. Whiskey? Let it be too warm. It gets your blood up, says the bartender. Beer? It's perfect. But after Danaher tosses his beer in Thornton's face, the Duke knocks him through the door and the fight is over. It was a good fight then. The combatants drink more beer. They go to the Thornton home. They have dinner with a pitcher of beer, of course. Say sexist, say macho. Just don't say the John Ford offering isn't a great, great movie. Well, the Midwest is well suited to beer movies, Christian Slater told us in Heather's. This is Ohio. If you don't have a brewski in your hand, you might as well be wearing a dress. Well, you know, usually the good guys drink beer. In The Adventures of Robin Hood, the evil Prince John. Now, this is the 1938 version with Errol Flynn. Marvelous Technicolor. Fun, loving, enjoyable film. You know, in that one, the good guys won. Usually the good guys drink beer. In Robin Hood, the evil Prince John, Claude Rains, drinks wine in a Norman castle and plots murder, while his great good-hearted brother, King Richard the Lionhearted, drinks English ale now, wouldn't you know? And there are plenty of memorable beer moments in films. I like Rodney Dangerfield as Thornton Mellon in the film Back to School. He tells the server, bring us a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes until someone passes out, and then bring one every four. How about the Shawshank Redemption? You don't think of that as a beer movie. It's kind of a prison movie. The Shawshank Redemption, Tim Robbins, as convict Andy Dufresne, offers to help one of the guards with a financial transaction in exchange for 3 bottles of beer apiece for each of me co-workers. I think a man working outdoors feels like more of a man if he can have a bottle of suds. Of course, the probably second greatest beer movie of all time would be Animal House, National Lampoon's take on the 1960s fraternity scene. You remember John Belushi and his fun-loving crowd? Beer is a cast member with a non-speaking part. Now here's some other beer movies from a place called workrobot.com. Try Young Einstein. Yahoo Sirius portrays Albert Einstein as an Australian surfer, rocker, physicist who finds a way to put the bubbles back in beer. Of course, there was a movie called Beer, starring Loretta Swit, played an advertising executive who developed a controversial campaign to save the Knorr-Becker Brewery from financial ruin. How about Strange Brew with Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas? They star as Canadian beer worshippers Bob and Doug McKenzie. And they get jobs at a brewery where they expose an evil plot by Max von Sydow to dominate the world by putting mind-controlling chemicals into the beer. Of course, there's always the old proverbial Johnny Paycheck. You know, there's a song that was turned into a movie. You remember that? You remember the name of it? Come on, come on, tell me you don't. How about Take This Job and Shove It? Take This Job and Shove It. Yeah, well, unfortunately, in this country today, they've told us, we're taking your job, you shove it. This is the story of a young corporate manager who was sent to his hometown to reorganize a failing brewery that is the town's biggest employer. And, of course, Smokey and the Bandit. Burton Reynolds was going to earn a cool $80,000 if he smuggled a truckload of Coors from Texarkana to Atlanta in 28 hours. Movies. Beer. Don't you love beer? It's just... And maybe you don't. You know, you got to be saying, we're listening to Christian radio. We'll not be wanting to hear about, you know, beer. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. There's worse things you could hear about on this program. Trisha Yearwood.
But I don't mind the money at all. I see lots of sad faces and lots of bad cases of folks with their backs to the wall. And I need four walls around
your source. I can laugh at your jokes. I can watch you fall down on your knees.
Your jokes.
I can close down this bar, go and gas up my old car. And I can pack up, hold on and mail in my key. But I need four walls around me to hold my life, to keep me from drawing the Lord's strength. And a
Jones and Trisha Yearwood. Can't do a song about beer without getting my man George Jones, a possum, into the deal. Well, you know, Coors Light twins, you remember a year or so ago, they had the hottest ads, billboard ads, and I guess to some degree on TV with these hot young babes. You know, well, they're little kids as far as I'm concerned. You know, I've got no use for them. But these hot young babes, the so-called Coors Light twins. You couldn't go in any city in America without seeing these massive billboards with these two. Well, they were covered, but they were scantily covered. I mean, I think they had jeans on, but, you know, tank tops, and obviously they're out to have a good time with the NASCAR crowd. But, no, that's Budweiser. But the Coors Light twins and the Miller Light catfight probably fascinates lots of beer drinkers, folks. But the catfight ads, which probably need a PG-13 rating, have been pulled. Now, my kids want to know why the guy loves twins as much as winter sports. Unlike a number of other beer advertising campaigns, those two won't be well remembered, but they will probably be fondly missed by wistful adolescents. There's a lot of us from the Midwest who are old enough to... you know, we'll always remember the fully clad and wholesome Mabel. You remember Hey Mabel, Black Label? That's from Carling, which also made Red Cap Ale. Mabel's smile and wink could knock you out, folks. That campaign came in 82 on Advertising Age's list of the top 100 ad campaigns of the 20th century. The top beer campaign, ranking 8 on the top 100 list, was Miller Lite's Tastes Great, Less Filling. That was their line in 1974, and that brought us grizzled jocks arguing over the beer's merits. Football greats Matt Snell. Oh, we're going to have problems with this morning, are we? This doesn't want to read a CD. That's cute. Football greats Matt Snell, Ernie Stouter, John Madden, Dick Butkus, and Bubba Smith. Of course, you had baseball notables Billy Martin, Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, Boog Powell, and Bob Uecker. Bob Uecker was a baseball great. Oh, no, he was a baseball notable. They characterize or the characters like mystery writer Mickey Spillane, and of course even comedian Rodney Dangerfield, we got him in here twice today, dotted the life of the campaign and made beer drinkers everywhere take sides, folks. Tastes Great, Less Filling also came in fourth on Advertising Age's list of the top 10 slogans of the century. But you know, there was Budweiser's kitschy, homey, This Bud's For You campaign in the 1970s. That slogan preceded by words, For All You Do. You remember? For All You Do, This Bud's For You. Made a lot of folks feel like the company was saluting us with every quaff. Bud came in at 27 on the so-called century list. I got news, folks. At 75, get this. This is the top 100 list. I want you to think about this. Some of you folks who are probably 75, remember From the Land of Sky Blue Waters. You remember the animated bear that made hams popular in many 1950s households? The campaign included animation and real-life shots of Minnesota and its beautiful woodlands. Each commercial was a little story unto itself. I remember growing up in Wisconsin, and we would watch the Wednesday night and Friday night fights, the boxing matches on WTMJ, which was, I think, like Milwaukee Journal Television up in Wisconsin. And what became interesting about it is they were sponsored by Schlitz. And I'll never forget my grandfather would sit there. I was a young kid. I was probably, 9, 10 years old. And what I would love about it, I apologize. It was advertised by Blatz. And my grandfather at commercial time would always say, Blatz, the sound that comes out of the bathroom. Isn't that exciting? Isn't that something you really always wanted to know?
Whoa!
Alan Jackson, your designated drinker tonight, baby.
Here's my keys. I want you to take them. I think I'm gonna need you to get back home. Onto my hat, I don't want to lose it. I couldn't stand for something else to be gone. I'm sure you know the reason I'm here crying. I think you'll understand why. Tonight I'm the designated drink. I just lost the one that wrapped me around her finger. I need to get to where I can't think of her. So tonight, I'm the designated drinker. Get you to help me. I need a friend to see me through. I hated the call. I knew you wouldn't mind at all. I know you know I'd do the same for you. I'm not the kind that likes to drown my sorrow. I may hate myself tomorrow, but tonight I'm the designated drinker. I just lost the one that wrapped me round her finger. I need to get to where I can't think of her. So tonight, I'm the designated drinker. Designated drinkers. Oh, tonight we're the designated drinkers.
Yeah, a little Alan Jackson. Tonight, we're the designated drinkers. Why not? You got to have a little bit of fun every once in a while. And we're doing that here on this program. For those of you who really care, we're going to actually make this program available on both audio tape and compact disc. There's some good music in it for those of you who like it. And the subject matter, well, it continues to get more and more interesting. So we brought it up earlier, you know, this business about liverwurst, but I think we need to share some more stories about beer. Far as we know for sure, beer predates Babylon, at least a little bit. Now, the Sumerians offered it to their gods, and later Hammurabi mentioned beer in his code of laws, mentioning even the death penalty for transacting for beer improperly, such as with money. The filthy lucre. And thus and alas, the history of government meddling in peaceful, voluntary transactions dates back as far as we have records, and probably before then. Beer was exported to Egypt from Babylon, showing that gains from trade also date back as far as we have records. Egyptians experimented with recipes, adding raisins and dates to some of their brews, showing that men who want good food have been striving since as far back as, well, we have records. Well, you know, there's no specific mention of beer in the Bible, but we can be sure that its brewing traveled across the Mediterranean and around it through the Middle East and probably arose independently in Europe as well. Now, finding beer barbaric, Rome tried to replace beer with wine. But since outlying areas didn't always have enough grapes, brewing persisted, and Rome even found beer making in Britain. Again, tried to replace it with winemaking, and again failed. Beer gained popularity as the population in Europe grew denser and water supplies grew polluted, by the way. Monasteries, yes, monasteries adopted and improved brewing in the late Dark Ages, which weren't really all that dark. Before 1000 AD, beer continued to attract governmental meddling, such as laws that first enabled monasteries to sell beer at their own brew pubs, and then later laws forbidding their doing so. And then, of course, then Al Capone got into business, well, oh, a different century. The most significant beer law is, believe it or not, Gary, the German Purity Law of 1516, which mandated that beer be made with only barley, hops, and pure water. Britain outlawed hops during those centuries and then later relented in the face of common sense. At the time of the Purity Law, it wasn't known that yeast provided fermentation. Brewers, many of whom were working from home, were relying on airborne yeast. Now the Purity Law is still in effect, making it the oldest active food law in the world, as far as we know. Brewing continued its steady improvement until the 19th century, when the improvement accelerated. Watt's steam engine made breweries bigger and more efficient. Louis Pasteur pasteurized beer for the first time. Of course, his notes credit beer study with his discoveries regarding microorganisms. Refrigeration allowed beer to be brewed year-round. And when previously some varieties could be brewed only during cold months, and Christian Hansen discovered that yeast could be cultivated. Of course, then there was Sam Adams, and his Friends of Liberty and, you know, the Sons of Liberty. And he now has his picture on a beer. Now, in the 20th century, manufacturing methods improved quality. Well, they claim consistency, sanitation. And though until around 1980, mass production in the United States resulted mainly in limited variety, increasing imports from major and microbreweries in Europe and Central America and Asia, along with the explosion of microbreweries in the U.S., has produced what is probably unprecedented variety today. There are over 1,000 brew pubs and at least dozens of microbreweries not attached to pubs in the U.S. now. Of course, many homes do the same thing. The historical importance of beer for the West cannot be overestimated. At one time, around 1500, that's the year 1500, there were 600 breweries in Homburg alone. That's in Germany, for those of you who don't know. Such concentration was possible because of increased free trade, specialization of labor and all that. Germans at the time were sending beer as far away as India. The India Pale Ale variety, now a common variant, is based on a British-developed brew that could be exported as far as India without spoiling. Trade by that time was nearly worldwide, whatever worldwide meant. And in fact, even the mid-1200s, according to unearthed artifacts, Frenchmen knew of over 200 spices, many of which would have come from various places in Asia, but the French chose to use Old Spice because they didn't bathe. But how those spices got that far, that long ago, wasn't known even to some of the middlemen providing them. But everybody made a profit, and everybody was happy with what they paid for what they got, and those who drank the product were even happier. Ah, but alas, my friends, not having detailed written history of every culture as we do of Europe is a loss to mankind. We have some sketchy idea that beer developed in South America hundreds of years ago or longer, and it's probably that beer developed everywhere. There was grain sitting around in water getting spoiled. How many marvelous recipes have been lost over the centuries and over the millennia? That beer has been tremendously important to the lives of men is established by all the records we have. In fact, I have a couple of German drinking records. For example, the Code of Hammurabi allowed to rich men, and European brewpub monasteries allowed to monks the ration of 5 liters of beer per day. 5 liters of beer today? Boy, that's enough to even make Homer Simpson a happy camper, huh? Come on, let's go. You gonna play for me or the?
Yes! Oh yes! Woohoo!
For those of you who can't figure out what 5 liters of beer is, that's 14 12-ounce bottles. You got that, Gary? 14 of the little gems. Well, in Germanic lands, circa 1000 to 1500 AD, children got 2 liters a day. That's right. Ben Franklin had beer for breakfast, had it for lunch, dinner, also had it for a nightcap. I don't know how strong beer was in those times and places. Some estimates for the alcohol content of ancient Egyptian beer run between 3% by volume to 10%. That's more than a lot of wines in this country. Well, given that most brands on the American market today are between 4 and 6%, and that most large breweries in America have German lineage, and that the German purity law dates from 1516, it's probably safe to guess that rarely did any beer brewed between 3000 BC and today get much lower than 3%. Of course, back when I was a kid, there was something called near beer, which was, what, 1% or 2%? And I'm sure today, in these politically correct times, there's also something called queer beer. But that's another story. Well, my favorite brew pub has on the menu beers ranging from between 4 and 10.5%. Ben Franklin and German dark-aged children were indeed drinking beer. No, I didn't say, never mind. Well, now that we have all these choices, what do we do, folks? Ha, 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 the glory of capitalism. There's so many good ones available, you can go fat and broke finding a favorite. Well, I've been leaning toward Dutch and German beer most of my life. Never really cared for Mexican. It's, you know, it's the water thing. You know, Mexico south of Arizona and what we flush may show up in a bottle of Corona by next week. I don't know. But, you know, we can tolerate some American mega breweries, but we prefer some of the micros. There's ales and lagers and stouts and pilsners. Oh, they're all good. I have no real connoisseur guidelines to offer regarding what sorts of flavors make one beer better than another. If a beer is too bitter or sweet for your liking, then it's no good. I can say that a beer is coming from a micro or pub brewery doesn't mean it's good. A local brew pub I know uses or over-roasts some particular ingredient, making the beer perfectly undrinkable. And any distributor can let beer get too hot in the truck, turning the beer nasty kinds of bitter. This Bud's for you? No thanks. I get headaches even smelling it. Well, my friends, dedicated brewmasters all over the West have spent the last 1,200 years devoting themselves to improving the quality and varieties of beers available to us. The legacy, more than any other, accrues to the work of thousands of poignant and worthy brewmaster lives. And to ignore their contributions, to abstain from imbibing of the fruits of their valued labors, would be dishonorable, nay, despicable. To the love and labors of vast, dead, innumerable Meisters Brewing, we know that Liverwurst, beefsteak, jalapeno-laden Tex-Mex, and virtually every heroic food known to man reaches its gustatory and visceral zenith only in the presence of beer. Only in the presence of beer. Hearken, hoist it, baby. I'll be back.
The honky tonks in Texas were my natural second.
This one's for you, Gary.
Where you tip your hat to the ladies and the roads of San Antonio.
That's a drinking song.
Well, I grew up on music we call Western Swing. It don't matter who's in Austin, Bob Wills is still the king. I can still remember the way things were back then. In spite of all the hard times, I'd live it all again. Just to hear the Texas Playboys and Tommy Duncan sing makes me proud to be from Texas, where Bob Wills is still the king. You can see the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee. It's the home of country music, on that we all agree. But when you cross that old Red River horse, that just don't mean a thing. Cause once you're down in Texas, Bob Wills is still the king. If you ain't never been there, then I guess you ain't been told that you just can't live in Texas unless you got a lot of soul. It's the home of Willie Nelson, the home of Western Swing, and he'll be the first to tell you Bob Wills is still the king.
What in the world did that song, Bob Wills is Still the King, have to do with drinking? Well, frankly, it doesn't have a thing to do with it, folks. It's just a good drinking song for them of us who partake upon occasion. Oh, yes, my friends, don't think that I don't imbibe. I mean, I don't get crazy with it. You know, you have to do it responsibly. You've got to do it with a certain degree of moderation. We attempt to do that. You know, if your thirst for beer is is sated with just one, you're in luck. Now, there are those health professionals who say that a beer a day is good for you. I find that it cleanses the liver and kidneys real quick, boy, around this here place. Internal medicine physician Radha Potigu of Ohio said a social drinker who consumes a beer or two occasionally is at little health risk. She pointed to the research that showed the occasional glass of red wine to be favorable in lowering cholesterol and contributing to heart health. But if you drink every day, then one beer goes to two, and two can grow into four, she observed. Well, it depends on how stupid you are, lady, but or how thirsty you are, or how hot it is outside. There's many things like this that we need to take into consideration, don't you know? She said that she and her colleagues warn patients to separate alcohol consumption from the time they ingest prescription medications. It's been shown that moderate alcohol consumption, including beer and wine and distilled alcohol, may reduce the risk of heart disease. But there is a caveat, and that is one's overall diet and lifestyle. A diet low in fats and cholesterol and a regular program of exercise are important components for health, of course. And if you don't currently drink, maybe you shouldn't start for health reasons, but for those who choose to drink, they should do it responsibly at all times and in moderation. Of course, moderation generally means one drink a day for women and no more than two drinks per day for men. But, well, gee, the old Germans drank, what, 14 bottles a day, huh? Eh? The difference, of course, are attributable to disparity in body weight, the ways in which men's and women's bodies process alcohol. A study reported in the American Journal of Gastroenterology indicated that if your cup of cheer is beer, which is what this program is about, or wine, the good news is that you could have a slightly lower risk of carrying a germ that causes stomach ulcers. Yep, see, Gary, that's what you tell Donna. That's the reason you're drinking beer, to make sure you don't get stomach ulcers. The study conducted in the United Kingdom tested 10,537 people for a common bacterium, something called H. pylori, which can cause stomach ulcers. Not everyone who carries the bug gets an ulcer. Some people recover on their own. Well, you know, it goes on and on and on with all this health stuff. But look, folks, there is a thing that I really have to share with you. There are tests that they ran which subjected who drank one or two half pints of beer a week, dropped their infection rate by 11%, blah, 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 blah. The point is, don't get carried away with any of this. The study showed that those who consumed more than the six-week half pints didn't see any protection whatsoever against the ulcers. Researchers believe that the explanation may lie in the fact that beer and wine increase stomach and secretions, thereby speeding the emptying of the stomach. I can attest to that, my folks. Hard liquor doesn't give the same benefit, though. They also pointed to the fact that beer and wine are rich in compounds with antibacterial properties. There's a place called the Alliance Community Hospital in Alliance, Ohio. It's a cardiac rehabilitation exercise specialist, has totally different focus, some guy named Anjok Palmier. They can't find American people to interview, right? Just isn't going to happen. The has this explanation for this thing called the so-called beer belly that some men acquire. He says the beer belly is a myth, and it isn't. What does that mean? She says that's where men collect most of their fat while women put it on their thighs and their hips. So guys with higher calorie intakes can tend to get a beer belly. And since beer is high in carbohydrates, that could help them put on fat. Most people who spend an hour or two in a bar quaffing a few, she added, are unlikely to go home and take a run to run off the calories, and they sit and drink, and then they go home and go to sleep. Oh, well. I don't drink a lot of beer because, frankly, it does put me to sleep, and I would prefer to stay awake most of the time, although last night I said the heck with it and had a beer, and I slept very well, thank you very much. I'll tell you what, folks. There are those who would prefer a wee bit of whiskey. Comes from the Gaelic, meaning water of life. That's right. One online dictionary describes whiskey as a spirituous liquor distilled from a mash of grains and usually rye, barley, oats, wheat, or corn. Scotland, Ireland, and Canada and the U.S. make the world's whiskey. Only whiskeys I care about are from Scotland and Kentucky. About 95% of U.S. whiskey distilleries are in Kentucky. Most of the rest are in Tennessee. Whiskey, which is spelt W-H-I-S-K-Y in the Isles, was made in England as far back as the 11th century in monasteries, no doubt by some of the same heroes who helped develop the beer. Now, whiskey takes a lot of work, though, you see. First, the grains are malted and allowed to sprout, then they're fermented, then they're distilled, simmered to evaporate and collect the alcohol and flavor while leaving the water behind. And then the whiskey is aged in wood barrels and usually oak. You ever get those things to put out on your patio? Oh, they continue to smell good, don't they? Woo, baby. Where the heck are we? Okay, the color and flavor you see in the final product are the result of this aging, which takes a minimum of 2 years in Kentucky. Now, law requires that you mention it on the label if you age less than 4 years. And some of it's done up to 40 years in some of the most expensive Scotch whiskies. And the reason for the aging, my friends, does so much for the whiskey that it's that somebody burns the inside of the barrel with a blowtorch before using it. That's right. Do you know that? How do you think it got burnt? Use your brains. Use your brains, folks. This burning produces sugars from the sap in the wood. That's right. Resultant ashes and or soot explain why the whiskey has to be filtered later. New barrels are used for every batch of whiskey in Kentucky. Some used Kentucky barrels are bought and reused by Scottish distillers. Now, the freshly distilled, not yet aged whiskey is almost as clear as water, relatively flavorless, and 140 to 150 proof, sometimes much higher. Whoo-hoo, white lightning. Whiskey evaporates from the barrels during aging, and up to 75 or 25% of the barrel may be lost. After aging, the whiskey is filtered, usually through some variety of carbon, and then bottled. And most whiskey has water added to dilute it to 80 proof, which is only 40% alcohol. But some brands offer a variety of 2-at-barrel proof, no water added, which I've seen as high as 126 proof. Booker's Bourbon, aged 7 years. I guess I need to try some at $50 a jug. But now at least you see one mechanism that relates longer aging to higher price. Less whiskey remains in the barrel after a longer time. Alcohol being the first thing to evaporate, it doesn't evaporate. You got the tasters that are in there tippling all day long. But you're getting more whiskey barrel flavor for the bottle. Additionally, more man hours, barrel years, grain acres go into a bottle with longer aging. Scotch whiskeys can be blended or single malt. Single malt means the whiskey was made from malted barley, not a single distillery. Doesn't necessarily mean grain from a single farm or field. Blended means you're getting a blend of whiskeys from different malts, possibly from different distilleries, even different manufacturers, and some of the whiskey may be made from unmalted grain. Usually blends are less expensive, though Johnny Walker makes one blend that sells for about $200 a bottle. Never spend that much on a bottle. I've never met a blend I liked. That's blend, not blonde. Bourbon whiskey, or Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey, is named for the Mississippi River County, in Kentucky, whence much of the whiskey once was distributed, more than for where the whiskey originates today, folks. To be called bourbon, the whiskey must be made from at least 51% corn mash and lesser amounts of other grains. The recipe for the other grains varies from one maker to another. How do you tell a better whiskey from a bad one? By tasting. I have no idea, but I've got some ideas. First, there ain't no such flavor as smooth. And all whiskeys are the same viscosity and texture, which is watery, so smooth usually will mean only the absence of a bad flavor, or perhaps the presence of a pleasing aftertaste or finish, which can take any form. Many tasting reviews of whiskeys and bourbons use such language as hints of vanilla in the bouquet, peaty, dark in the palate with a dry oak finish. Oh, you know what? This business about whiskey is just too darn much for me. It ain't worth it. This show, my friends, has been about beer. And if this thing will ever go off, oh, yeah.
Yes! Oh, yes!
And you thought I was going to get away with this show without some Alan Jackson one more time? I hope you've enjoyed the week. Without apology, I'm out of here.
Pop a top again. Wow. I've just got time for one more round. Set them up, my friend. Then I'll be gone and you can let some other fool sit down. I'd like for you to listen to a joke I heard today from a woman who said she was through and calmly walked away. I tried to smile and did a while.
and it felt so out of place. Did you ever hear of a clown with teardrops streaming down his face? Pop a top again. I think I'll have another round. Set 'em up, my friend. Then I'll be gone and you can let some other fool sit down. Pop a top again. I think I'll have another round. Set 'em up, my friend. Then I'll be gone and you can let some other fool sit down. Pop a top again.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.